I love the talking guy show.
I hear two guys talking.
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 Two guys.
Two Guys Talking is an internet radio show providing you with entertainment, a sharing of viewpoints, and fun. Join us as we venture into the world of entertainment and discuss a variety of topics, from television shows, DVDs, feature films, and more. This week, Two Guys Talking. It's the third entree of Spider-Man being served up by Tobey Maguire and company. It's time for Two Guys Talking, the Spider-Man 3 review. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
And I'm Ryan Parker, your other host.
Ryan Parker, of course, is from the Comic Knot podcast, which you can also find on the Two Guys Talking podcast network at www.twoguystalking.com, also at comicknot.com, comicknaut.com. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for filling in for Brian.
No problem.
We have what is a movie I think that we've had probably one of the most hyped for ever. I think it's because of the success of the first two films and so much anticipation and wanting success for this third film.
Trust me, I go into every movie I see these days very guarded, especially to sequels to movies I loved. I'm always guarded against the hype.
Yeah.
And I let myself fall right into the hype trap on this
really,
one.
Really, really. Well, with that, let's get right into the hype for Spider-Man 3.
You'll find a Spider-Man!
The hype. I think I can remember vividly, right after the end of Spider-Man 2, them talking about the villains, talking about the actors who would come out, and most importantly, Sam Raimi talking about the story and how guarded the story was going to be, and that you wouldn't get any details until it was almost out.
I don't think he released the story to anybody in making this movie, and that must be why it was guarded, because he didn't have one.
I agree with that. Sadly, I had a lot of anticipation for this movie, mostly because the Spider-Man franchises have built vertically on themselves, meaning the first Spider-Man came out, and it was probably one of the best adaptations of a comic book ever. And then you have Spider-Man 2, which absolutely took the Spider-Man mythos to a completely another and vertical top level, going up and over the first one.
It made me openly weep.
It was a great movie. Raimi is a master of the Peter Parker guilt smackdown, without question. He knows Peter Parker. He knows how to portray the characters around Peter Parker to shovel all of that guilt and negativity onto Peter, and then, you know, him just kind of dropping his shoulders and succumbing to guilt. Which is exactly what happened in the comic books as well.
Exactly.
Everybody heaped on Peter, and not only did he have to save the world as Spider-Man, but he also had to take care of the ancillary crap that other people would throw on top of him.
Sure.
Raimi has that down to a T, and it really does shine through in the hype for this film. Yeah. In regard to hype for the theaters, I had the great pleasure of seeing this film twice that opening weekend in digital theaters, and I don't think I'm ever going to go back. It was a smaller digital screen, but I think that was actually better. I like looking at the digital screen because it looked just like the plasma screen we got recently at home. And then the smaller theater gave me a much more satisfactory sound experience. And I don't know if that's just because when you have a bigger room, the sound is completely different. But this theater, there were three digital theaters in the theater mega Googleplex we went to see.
Right.
There were two theaters on each side that held 134 people, and then one in the middle that held 300-something. And we saw, the two times I saw it were in the side theaters that were 134 each. And it was an excellent, excellent experience.
I'm not really sure if I saw it in digital or not. I mean, mm-hmm. The movie was pretty good regardless.
Mm-hmm.
I could certainly understand that seeing it on a smaller digital screen at this point in the technology would be better, because I just don't think those bigger digital theaters have the power to generate that kind of lighting. I think I saw Episode 3 of Star Wars on a digital screen, and it was really disappointing. In fact,
really?
I enjoyed it the second time I saw it that weekend at a regular theater.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just because the color and the lighting was better.
That's interesting. And in this movie, as with many other giant blockbuster movies, especially when they're so action-packed like a Spider-Man movie is supposed to be, the sound was used very, very well. There was lots of swirling around your head. There were our last movie review, 300, we talked about the thumping bass factor.
Mm-hmm.
This one was perfect, too. It was just loud enough, and just when there were those moments of abject terror and when something's really supposed to scare you, then they'd eke up to that just top level, but it would never get to where you just feel the seats going. You didn't have any of that, and it was really, really nice.
I think a lot of that comes from Sam Raimi himself having his beginning in horror movies,
mm-hmm.
because there was certainly parts during the movie, I was watching the movie with my girl, and she definitely reached out and grabbed my arm or whatever, because it
had those
horror movie like moments in it. So,
and he really does bring that craft over. You're absolutely right, and I think that's why we'll get into that when we start talking about the good of the film. There's a lot of, I won't say horrific, but there's some scary shit in this movie. I mean, it's not just a light romp at all. There's some really terrifying stuff that if you were just to flash it up in front of you, you'd jump back in your seat, not sure what you saw. How many people did you have? Both times we saw it, it was packed.
I purposely held off the scene at the day after the opening day, just because I think in the 300 review I described that it was a little disappointing. The crowd
was really
obnoxious, so I wanted to avoid that, and I went and saw a matinee the very next day, and it was not completely filled, but it was certainly crowded. But it was a good crowd. It's a good quiet crowd, adult crowd that was there to see the movie and not socialize. So it was a good, comfortable experience.
I saw it twice. I saw matinees both times. I saw it early on Friday afternoon. Got into work early so I could leave early, and went and saw it on Friday afternoon. And then we saw it at 11 o'clock on Sunday. And so we had both kind of demographics, where you've got probably high school kids and younger adults in that Friday.
Right.
And then on Sunday, it was mostly, there were a lot of kids in there. And it was really funny because the kids were not loud, bouncy kids. They were riveted to the screen, but they were also riveted to their parents in those moments of terror that we were talking about.
Parental guidance makes a big difference.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was good. It was good to see that hype inside of this film. You'll find the Spider-Man! 3! The Money. We had talked about 300 being a juggernaut.
Sure.
This destroys anything that 300 was doing, but it's just simply because it's one of the huge summer blockbusters and a sequel. The Money on the four-day count right now is $161,500,000 on a four-day take. That's it.
I'd take it.
Yeah, I would too. And they got me twice. They got my $875 each time I went to see the matinee. And I don't even know what a regular movie is when you go and see a regular movie. Is it 10? Is it
I think it's just under 10. I think you only save a dollar or two on matinees these days, so it's a little bit of a joke.
And I can remember when it was like five something for a matinee.
A matinee was worth going to
see. Yeah, yeah. I don't see this stopping until another movie tries to trump it, and I think it's even going to continue further, not because it's such a great movie, but again because it's preying on the first and second ones being such great films.
Right.
It is getting up and down reviews depending on whom you speak to, but the vast majority of the ones that I usually lean with, rather, they're thumbs downing it. They're not giving a thumbs up on this film.
With good reason, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Though it opened with $141 million, it still didn't shine story-wise, and that's too bad. Well, that rounds up the general picture of the movie. Let's get straight to the meat. You'll find the Spider-Man 3! The good. The good in this movie, and believe it or not, well, I know this won't end up being a favorable review of this film, there is much good. Just like someone inside of Star Wars said, there is much good in him, there is much good in this movie. Sadly, it's going to be eclipsed by what is, the detracting factors of this film in the bad. The first one that's good, you have to put the effects on the top shelf. My favorite thing to say to people currently about this film is, it's a great film as long as I can take pictures every 30 seconds inside the film, because the film is gorgeous. And I don't think it's just because it was on the digital screen. As you said, you saw it on a regular screen.
Right.
This is a gorgeous film, regardless of whether or not you're looking at people in costume, if you're looking at sweeping pans across New York, which I think was much more a character in this film than either of the first two. And I don't know if that was intentional, but there was more of what I think was a real city in this film than there have been in the first two, without question.
I love the special effects, too. The scene with the crane, the out-of-control crane operator, you forget how ridiculous the whole scenario is just because you get so sucked into it.
Yeah, and it's Gwen pages Stacy, out of a comic book. It really is.
And Gwen Stacy, I'm not exactly sure, but I feel like her hanging from that telephone cord was a tribute to the original Superman movie where Lois Lane is hanging from the CB. And it just was too coincidental for it not to have been in consideration.
Yeah.
But that whole scene when Peter or Spider-Man is diving straight down towards her, dodging those chunks of the building. The whole thing is just awesome.
And then using those chunks to propel himself faster
propel
than
himself
how she's...
Off. Yeah. As somebody said, almost like an Olympic diver.
Yes.
Did almost the exact same perfect form.
Yeah.
So,
and again, we get back into the marriage of the effects along with the sound system. It was amazing Spider-Man, literally.
Sure.
It was very, very well done. You'll find the Spider-Man 3! The flavor. The flavor of many of the things inside the movie was, again, spot on. Sam Raimi and the team that have created what are the overall general scopes of the characters, they have the flavors that are inside the characters. They have the look of Gwen Stacy pegged to a T.
Sure.
Without question, with Bryce Dallas Howard. The Spider-Man suit, originally I thought that the silver trim on it was going to be so detracting, and it's not. It really does provide it depth, provides you something else to look at than just this red and blue blob that's moving around at 1,000 miles an hour. That really pays off in this movie a bunch. You have all of the detail on a character I don't much like in this movie. You have the new goblin, whatever we're going to call him. Is he the new Green Goblin? Is he the Green Goblin?
He's called New Goblin.
Harry Goblin?
Let's call him
Harry Goblin.
Son of Goblin.
Son of Goblin.
Let's just call him Harry.
Harry in this has a bunch of really cool tech. I think it swayed just a bit to try and take advantage of the snowboarding crowd.
Snowboarding, yeah.
And it was okay, but it looked outstanding. All of the CGI, again, we get back to effects a little bit with that. All the CGI for him was all spot on realistic. I mean, there was never a time where I go, that really looks like a CGI shot. I was sold 100% on that. The Sandman. The flavor of the Sandman, if they took a picture of the comic book and held it up,
oh sure,
it's absolutely gorgeous. Again, the city of New York is a spectacular homage to what is the background of every single story of Spider-Man in general, and they captured that in this as well. A+ on that. J. Jonah Jameson. J.K. Simmons does not get nearly enough credit for this role, and I'm sorry that we didn't see him more than what we saw in this one. He was way underused in Spider-Man 2, but in this one,
sure.
Oh, he just, it was good, and I wanted more from that.
And it's certainly a character role, but it's a much-needed character role to keep this movie going.
Yeah.
You know, he shouldn't, you know, feel any shame in just being a character actor in that part of it, because you have to have J. Jonah Jameson right, or the whole Spider-Man mythos doesn't really work, even on the big screen.
Right,
so
right. You literally have a boss character that has to be pulled through from the page to the screen, and they've captured that wonderfully again inside of this. In fact, the entire Bugle in general, I think, was really, really good. They had that, I don't know what building that is in New York, but they had that kind of giant, tall, pie-shaped building.
Yeah, what is that called?
I'm not sure what that building's called. In fact, I'll bet you an audience member knows. If you know what the name of that long, tall, cake piece-looking building is called, send us an email at info@twoguystalking.com. Let us know what the name of that building is so we can put that into some show notes for this show. In general, the flavors of just about everything that we saw on the screen, especially the flavor of the characters, was decent. That was good.
You'll find the Spider-Man!
Origins. Origins are probably one of the hardest things to capture inside of a comic book movie.
Sure.
Whether it's the actual hero or, more importantly, the villains. I think the vast array that we've seen in comic book movies I think it's kind of 50-50 at this point, depending on how good it's done and how quickly it's done.
Correct.
What I have to give to this movie, without question, is an A+ on the origin of the Sandman. That he's a criminal, okay, we know that. We know that he's running away from the police, we know that. But the span of time that they're able to show you that guy, give you his backstory, and the creation of the bad guy, and the quality of all of that, is A+ in this movie. If there was a model for the origin stories of a villain, or even a hero, I think it would even pay off even more. That's it. It was a perfect throw from comic book to real life. I really enjoyed it.
I agree with you on the actual transformation from Flint Marko into the Sandman, that whole sequence of events.
Yeah.
The backstory part, though, I hated it.
Really?
And just the fact that they're forcing it into the continuum of the movies themselves, you know, let's not talk about comic books. Let's just talk about Spider-Man 1 and 2. The fact that they felt like they even had to need to go back and change what we already knew from the movies to fit in his character, I just wasn't with. But yeah, the actual on-screen visual transformation of Flint Marko into Sandman was very neat. You mentioned that Danny Elfman's music, while I think was very stale through most of it, that was a really kind of alluring, haunting sound on.
If I'm not mistaken, Danny Elfman only provided what is the bass underline of what is the original score, so it was someone else.
So it may not have been Danny.
It was someone else, right?
Okay.
I'm glad that you mentioned the music, because I think that we talked about that in our pre-brief. But the music in that is haunting. I can still hear that in my head. It's very well done, as is the score in general in the movie over what is Danny Elfman's original soundtrack, which was stellar to begin with.
And it really was. It was kind of one of the stronger emotional moments of Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
And that it seemed very, very sad to me.
Yeah.
And
But it reminded me of the score from Schindler's List.
Yeah, it really did.
That same tugging, powerful, you know, absolute down in the dumps and no way to pull yourself out. That's what that music provided for me.
Unfortunately, you don't see the same sadness that comes from that transformation scene in his character in the rest of the movie.
That's very true. He sadly is a stone.
It's a totally different
stone
character
sand
after
guy.
That. It's almost like that transformation scene is a whole special Sandman segment. And it has nothing to do with, like you said, the backstory or the after story from that point.
Right, right. And we'll talk a little bit more about not only the origin, but also the exit of Sandman inside this film as we get further along in the review.
You'll find the Spider-Man!
Three!
Now and again, MJ. Something that I've been talking about since the franchise began was every three or four times inside of each of the movies, there is a picture you can take, or maybe a little tiny video series that you can take out of every film, and you go, yep, that looks like MJ. The problem inside of this movie is that there's only two or three times that happens in this. And the rest of the time, Kristen Dunst has never been MJ for me. There's been a couple of times where you get that kind of female buddiness. I'm not sure quite how to explain that.
I mean, at the very least, MJ is that hot girl that, you know, as a comic book geek, you knew you never had a chance with, but she was still your friend anyways.
Yeah.
She still hung out with you, went to movies with you,
you know. Yeah.
And you knew you never had a shot with her. You weren't even going to try that with her. But you were still glad she was there because she made you look better. She made you feel better. Because, as I say, MJ in the comic books has this coolness about her.
Yeah.
You know, you take away, you know, the way that they drew her, you know, to look beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But her attitude and the way that they wrote her, especially in the early days, was just cool. She was that cool chick that you wanted to hang out with.
Absolutely. You've pegged it to a head. And the problem for me is that Kristen Dunst is not that person.
She's not that. I don't know if it's the way they've written her role, because in some movies I've seen Kristen Dunst, she is that role.
Oh, really?
And this MJ, they wanted to be vulnerable. And I understand that. I just don't understand why we don't get to see, like, this dual personality part, which I think would go perfect with the dual personality of Peter Parker and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But, you know, sure, you want to give her some more depth, so you give her weaknesses, you give her fears, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let us see this outside, this hard, tough, cool chick MJ. But then let's see the softer, you know, still scared of the shadow of her father, you know, the legacy he left for her.
Yeah.
Do something with that.
See, I kind
of
take
was,
it.
She was just a big bag of wine in this movie.
Yes.
You know, just
you pegged it perfectly.
Yeah, her.
And pegged it perfectly here, because Peter Parker in general is not a giant go-getter character. The reason he's turned into a go-getter character is because he's Spider-Man. And so that you already know Peter is whiny, which I think is why Tobey Maguire has always worked as Spider-Man, by the way.
Right.
Because Tobey Maguire, when he's not Spider-Man and doesn't have the suit on, is whiny.
He
is Peter Parker, and that's why Raimi's sucked up on him so big. You have too much wine with both of them acting that way. And the whole thing inside the comic book series in general, not to compare the movies to the comic book straight line across, because you can't, but the thing inside the comic book that made it alluring was that when Peter was down in the dumps, MJ was there to provide some support for what is super in the dumps, the world's on top of me, what the hell am I going to do, Peter Parker? They don't have that inside this movie in general.
Right, and he did the same for her. And that's not And that's not just a fanboy bitching about a movie.
Right.
That's just, the story's already there. The character development's already there. Why would you not use it in a $150 million movie?
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
And basically what you wind up with is two very dysfunctional people who, instead of, you know, supporting each other in their weaknesses, being, you know, instead of, you know, MJ being what Peter isn't and Peter being what MJ isn't and equaling each other out, you have two very negative people that just seem to be spiraling out of control with each other. It's a very dysfunctional relationship that
agreed, totally.
Isn't positive at all in my eyes.
I agree.
You'll find the Spider-Man!
Three!
Crushing situations. We alluded a little bit to this, to the how perfect Sam Raimi has captured the flavor of what is all around Peter Parker and how Peter Parker feels. That continues in this movie without question. You have all the stuff that's going wrong, and then you have just a little spark of Peter going, you know, come on, MJ, get back on the horse. And then she heaps on some more, and then all the characters around them heap on more onto Pete. That is perfect, and Raimi is a master of that with Peter Parker. He always has been. He always will be. And there's a piece inside of this when they're on the bridge, And those of you that have seen the movie, you know what's going to happen. But he's there, and the first thing she says in general is that it's over. It's not working. I can't be with you anymore. And the heart tugging I felt wasn't just because of the comic books. It's the overall feel that Sam Raimi's been able to provide inside this movie and the previous too. And when Pete reaches out to grab that ring as the lifeline call in the who's going to be a millionaire for Peter Parker life,
right?
You just feel that. You go, oh, Pete. You know, the last-ditch effort that he's got is to pull out the ring. And that to me felt like, I know I've seen that somewhere in a comic book. I don't know what issue it would have been, but I've seen that scene for Peter Parker.
Sure.
And seeing it in real life was just, it was yanking on the heartstrings. And I love that, because that is Peter Parker for me.
You'll find a Spider-Man!
Three!
The action.
The action was good.
Yeah. I'm going to put the effects and the action in both the positive and the negative. Again, the cavalcade of action that's in this movie is an onslaught of action. The problem is, I think, that there's just not simply enough of it.
Two-hour and 20-minute movie about a superhero character, I can really only remember 2 minutes of action.
Yeah.
It's just, I can't remember what I did for 2 hours when I was watching this movie, because it certainly wasn't all action-filled.
Yeah,
so,
I agree with that totally.
But everything that was there was good.
Yeah.
You'll find a Spider-Man!
Three!
Bryce Dallas Howard's role. I've seen her in a variety of other things, and she's never disappointed me. In this one, she's spot on. In fact, what I had said to listener Christine when we went and saw it on Sunday was that if they eventually reboot the series and they need to pick another MJ, they need to pick Bryce Dallas Howard that was in this movie, that body shape, throw a wig on her, and let her act. Because just the tiny little pieces of acting that she had in this were brilliant, and they were all MJ. They were all MJ-like, every single one of them. Whether it's her being helped in the classroom, whether it's her being all hot and sexy in the giant skyscraper that has the thing going through it, whether it's her dangling by a wire, screaming her head off, or the touching scenes inside of the club, which ended up turning sour for both Peter and MJ and Gwen. But she could totally pull that off without question.
Yeah, thumbs up on Bryce Dallas Howard. I really, like you were saying, in the moment in the jazz club when she comes to the realization.
Yeah.
One of the only few moments in the movie where I think an actor was allowed to act, and I thought she did a great job at it. But
and it could have been so overplayed. I think that's why I appreciated her character and every single time she was shown in this, because every single time it was put on the tee and you could totally overplay any of them.
Sure.
And she didn't. That was really well done. So there you have it. Good things throughout the film from start to finish. Sadly, we get to the bad.
You'll find a Spider-Man!
The bad. Just as I listed it on the listing of goods, the effects also fall into the bad category for me, and I'll tell you, it was right out of the start. When you get into the first major fight sequence with Harry and Peter after he picks him up off his scooter,
right.
It was almost too twisty-turny. And I know it was better the second time I saw, but maybe it's because the screen was so big. But there's so much 3D-ing going on inside of that first battle. I know that there are times I can actually go, when I freeze frame here, I don't know where up is.
That's possible, and that really may be an implied effect in that we're talking about Spider-Man, who can go in any direction at will, it seems like, with his agility. So maybe they were trying to recreate that, just didn't translate well.
Oh, that's a good thought.
I like that scene a lot, but I also probably saw it about 5 times online 4 or 5 months ago, like the whole scene. I don't know where it came from, if they had the whole scene uncut.
Okay.
So I was pretty familiar with it by the time I saw it on the big screen.
Sure.
So,
it happens again with a variety of characters, not just Harry, but the second Harry battle fight, the Venom, Spider-Man, Sandman, Harry, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated that a lot more. But again, it had all of those I'm not sure which way is up scenes. And I don't know if that your agility question mark really does play to that. Maybe that's it.
And another thing is the other Spider-Man movies, so many modern movies, when the action's supposed to be like really turned up and things are crazy, they zoom in tight, it's dark, you know. Even the recent Batman Begins movie, which was really good, some of those fight sequences were so uptight and dark, you really don't know what's going on. And where the other Spider-Man movies, a lot of it's broad daylight, and they don't have to, you know, worry about that. That was supposed to be a night scene, and you lose a lot of it in that dark alley, and, you know, maybe they just didn't do a very good job of translating that. Like, I think if they had done that in broad daylight, you wouldn't have had that issue.
I think you had, good point.
I think you had a better idea, but I think just the dark effect might mess that up a little bit.
Yeah. And other than that, again, the effects were way, way on top of the good list rather than the bad list. But that was one thing where I can go, because of the effects, I really didn't appreciate that.
And they're in fairly seamless effects. I mean, they are they're starting to get to the point where it is a little bit harder and harder to tell the difference between what's real and what's not real.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man's been good about that, especially from the second one on. And they were still pretty good with that in this one.
Yeah.
So.
You'll find a Spider-Man!
The story. Again, we go back to the first couple of sentences of this review where we talk about, if I could take a camera into this film and take a picture every 30 seconds and leave and only know the story from the pictures that I've taken and the overall scope of the story, I'm pretty satisfied. The problem is that in between me taking pictures every 30 seconds, there's more story that sucks.
Sure.
I was totally not enamored with this story.
I'm going to paraphrase Mike, who helps me with the Comic Knot podcast.
Yeah.
And the way he describes a story, I can't think of a better way, in that it's kind of like a really mediocre sampler platter. A lot of nice-looking things, but nothing filled them up. And I would say that's a perfect analogy for
me. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, if you take, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, everything looks good on the outside, but there's really no substance or filling to almost hardly any of it. So
I think that's very accurate. The quick tell of any movie is, Ryan, tell me in just 10 or so seconds, what was this Spider-Man movie about?
I would say it was about Peter Parker's whiny girlfriend and people wanting to kill him.
Okay. So, as you can see, if you'd read that instead of whatever synopsis of the movie you've read in newspapers or wherever else, would that be something you'd want to go see because you want to go see Spider-Man or not? And the answer, unless I'm totally wrong, would be not. And so the reason that you're going to see it is because you want to see some more Spider-Man. It's not because you're going to see a whole bunch more story, which I think this is the perfect opportunity. You have what is fish-in-a-barrel audience for Spider-Man 3.
Sure.
And why on earth you don't take advantage of it with what is a killer story. And there are decades and decades and decades of stories to draw from. Even if you don't go original, you can take any one of those little nuggets of information and try and throw that through a comic, and I just don't understand why they didn't do it.
I don't understand why they didn't do it either. I mean, the rumor is that the studio and Sam Raimi, not knowing if this was indeed his last Spider-Man movie, I've heard that forced the Venom story onto him. Like, that was not
originally
planned.
I read that as well.
And that may or may not be the case, but even if it is, it wasn't that it was just forced in, but it was forced in with so little to work with.
Yeah.
Eddie Brock is strictly just a prop.
I mean,
and this is no knock on Topher Grace, and
right.
I'm not trying to say he's the world's greatest actor or anything, but
right.
he doesn't even get a chance in this movie as Eddie Brock.
No.
Venom, and it's really sad that they forced the Venom issue, because while Venom is not a personal favorite of mine from the comic books, I thought he'd be a great on-screen villain.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah.
And the thing about Venom is that he is supposed to be scary.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have the Spider-Man movies, directed by a guy who got his start in some pretty weird, twisted, scary Evil Dead movies.
Horror films. Straight up horror films
that I think are actually scary.
They're top-notch.
Demons screaming at you for 2 hours is scary.
Sure.
You have this guy taking maybe one of the most horrific supervillains in any comic book. You know, all supervillains have an evil side, do bad things.
Yeah.
But Venom is supposed to be scary. And for the most part, it was always done that way. And Venom is not scary at all in this movie. His physical presence isn't scary. His dialogue isn't scary. His on-screen presence is just not there. Considering he's CGI, he really looks like a guy in a suit to me.
Yeah. Well, a couple things here. I'm certain that there were scenes in this where there was a guy in a suit. What I also did not like, and I know that they did it because they had to give Topher Grace some sort of platform to act other than when he was Eddie Brock, but the removal of Venom's face. In fact, the fact that they don't even name the villain.
Right.
If you weren't familiar with Spider-Man, you'd have no idea if we started talking about Venom who the hell we're talking about. That they had to do that took away totally from the scare factor that you're talking about. You had a whole bunch of that, you know, Jurassic Park thing, and that worked. But then you'd go into another scene where he's crawling up on somebody and the black stuff would melt away from his face, and it's Topher with the lines coming on his forehead.
And some redneck fangs you know, that you get out of the gumbo sheets.
Yeah.
And that is one of my biggest complaints, not only about Spider-Man 3, but all movies that are coming out in this genre, or any kind of, like, supposedly over-the-top action blockbuster, mm-hmm. is that we are not watching characters in a thriller anymore. We are watching actors in a thriller now. And what I'm saying is they have to keep pulling away Venom to give Topher Grace FaceTime.
Yeah.
They keep pulling off Spider-Man's mask and keep ripping it off to give Tobey Maguire more FaceTime.
Right.
James Franco can't be the Green Goblin. He can't be the Hobgoblin. He can't be any of those guys, Jack-O-Lantern, because he still has to be James Franco at the
right.
end of the day.
Well, and the perfect example there is that the face mask that he has, his hair and the top of his head are exposed.
Sure.
What kind of helmet is that?
Right. You would think if you were flying through on a jet powered snowboard, you would want some sort of protection. I mean, I realize he's been taking these performance enhancing yeah. gas drugs or whatever, yeah. but you would still think that he'd want something to protect his face because obviously he got blown up. He's not, you know, completely yeah. invulnerable.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just these kind of movies. It's the same problem that you had in the newer Star Wars movies. It's the same problems you're having across the board. It's Hollywood is so scared that these movies are going to fail and they don't want to rely on anything like substance or plot that they just make sure they get the names in there.
Right.
To, you know, because when they look at this movie, you know, they look at Spider-Man 2. I don't know how much it did. Several hundred million dollars mm-hmm. worldwide.
Yeah.
And they say, well, you know, that was pretty good, but we didn't have enough 11-year-old Japanese girls seeing this movie. How do we get them in here? And they figure out a way to tie that in.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they're basing it on actors' personalities and not the characters' personalities.
Yeah.
And I started, and as much as I love Spider-Man 2, one of my criticisms is I started feeling like I was watching Tobey Maguire battle the world and not Peter Parker.
Yes, I agree.
And in this movie, I felt like I was just watching Tobey Maguire yeah. battle the world. I mean, it was, Peter Parker.
Yeah, I need to not have Tobey Maguire shoveled down my throat. I need the Spider-Man story shoveled
sure.
down my throat, and then I get to see Tobey Maguire act as Spider-Man. You're absolutely right, right on that.
And
you're absolutely right.
We're getting away from acting.
You'll find a Spider-Man!
Canon change. There's a bunch of things we're going to talk about here, the first and most egregious of which that I understand they did it to try and tie the three movies together, but they make Sandman, Flint Marko, the guy that actually ends up pulling the trigger on Uncle Ben, who is obviously Peter Parker's uncle and the progenitor of the "with great power comes great responsibility" quote that powers Spider-Man in general. Well, I understand why they did it. I understand they want to try and tie the three together and then also give a reason for Peter / Toby to be cheesed off at the Sandman. Totally unneeded.
Stupid.
Totally unneeded.
That was like cable channel, last season of a series, let's pull out a stop
yeah.
type move. There.
Yeah.
I mean, that was not a blockbuster story writing move.
Right.
And you're saying canon change, like it bothers you as far as comic book canon change. I don't even like how it fits into the canon of just the Spider-Man movies.
The movies, right.
You know, why they have to go back and tie that in when, I mean, because that makes Peter Parker a murderer now. Because he killed the first guy, more or less, thinking that he killed Uncle Ben. And now it turns out that wasn't even the guy. He was just another guy
right.
who actually said, let go of the old guy.
Right. And it also goes to serve against what is, because Uncle Ben told him, with great power comes great responsibility. Okay, fine. I am not responsible. I let the guy walk by. I didn't capture him. And so now my Uncle Ben's dead. Oh, wait a second. No, he's not dead because I did that. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right that it is so low-class, quick wrap-up storytelling mechanism is really sad, and it did not need to be in there.
Yeah, it certainly did not do anything to enhance the story.
No, nothing, zero.
I mean, and it worked in Michael Keaton's Batman because it played perfectly with, you know, Jack killing Bruce
yeah,
Wayne's parents
yeah.
and then later becoming the Joker. I mean, that was
right.
a brilliant move,
right?
Because that wasn't comic book canon at
right.
all. That was a great move, but how it fit into the scheme of just three Spider-Man movies,
yeah,
I didn't understand
that. To me, that also feels like something we're going to see something different on whenever the special edition 3.5 DVD comes out for this. I think we're going to see a lot more of stuff that was played with and stories and segments that were cut out, because I think this movie was probably longer than it originally was, and they cut out a whole bunch.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I had that same thought. It'd be very interesting to see if they release a special edition where they re-edit it and, like you said, add in other parts. Because I think just reorganizing what is there
mm-hmm.
could have made a better story.
Yes, I, and
without
I agree
even
with
adding anything.
Yeah.
But because it definitely had a terrible pacing to it.
Yeah.
You'll find a Spider-Man!
The suit details. This one's got me up at night. And it's because the base stuff that they drew on for Venom in this is something very, very special for me. This is the series of McFarlane books that were drawn Actually, right as I left my parents' house when I graduated high school. And so these are my coveted golden Spider-Man years.
Right.
Where I have every single comic, if not more than one copy. They're all bagged and boarded. They're left for when they're actually worth millions of dollars.
Sure.
It can be pulled out and provided to somebody that will care for them. And so the details of this are very, very important. For those that don't know, the alien that falls from the sky on a meteor, which was excellent. It's very well told. It doesn't encompass anything that where the actual suit came from. And it doesn't need to. In fact, I'm not even going to bother going into it.
Right.
That was fine. It lands, it latches onto the back of the scooter, and then eventually shows up. What's missing, however, is that, and it is literally missing, it's not a fanboy thing, there are benefits to the suit inside the comic book. One of the biggest benefits is that not only does it just kind of creep up on him like watery black liquid, but it will also morph into any clothes that you want inside the comic books. So if he goes, oh man, I got to get to work, all he's got to do is stand up, and the underwear that he's wearing is the suit. And so it changes into his everyday wear, and then he goes to work. When he has to become Spider-Man, instantly it becomes the black Spider-Man suit, and he's ready to go. One of the other benefits that you had inside of there was that in the comic book, there isn't any web built into his body. It's something right. that he has to actually put on there. Well, one of the benefits of the suit was that it would actually make the webs,
right.
so you'd never have to refill anything. Obviously, that's gone because of the way they've chosen how to make Spider-Man in the movies, but that was still an ancillary benefit. The last benefit is that it gave him more power, which they kind of alluded to in this. He was a little bit more bulky, and they gave Tobey Maguire the line, oh, the power, it feels so good, whatever he said.
Right.
And that conveys that, but it was way more than that. It allowed him to do much, much more inside the comic books that they never really talk about. And so when you add that up, that's a reason to keep this costume. The big negative that I'm telling you, Sam Raimi would have hit a home run with this, is that at night, while Peter Parker is sleeping, the suit takes him for rides.
Sure.
Because he's feeding from his life force. That's the whole thing about the suit, which you really don't get in this. He's wearing the suit. Oh, he's bad when he's got the suit on. Okay. There's way more to it than that. It's actually suckling the life force from him as he's sleeping. And then he's swinging around all night sleeping. I can totally see the scene where, and even that gargoyle picture is a piece of it.
Sure.
Where they zoom in from afar, and they get him where it almost looked like he was sleeping. And you know why? Because he was sleeping. And so all they'd have to do is pan up to the lens, to a half side of the face, scoot in through the lens, and you can actually see Peter just with his eyes closed, sitting behind the mask. How cool would that have been? And then you'd have more understanding, and a couple of lines would have paid it off. God, why am I so tired all the time now?
Sure.
A couple of mentions to Mary Jane, I'm sorry I slept in. I haven't been feeling well. I haven't been sleeping really well. I don't know why. I don't know what's wrong.
Very, very Tyler Durden-like from Fight Club.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And that you're going to go, the promos for the suit in general were perfect, where they've got Spider-Man in the reflection, the red and blue suit, and then you've got the Venom black Spider-Man suit sitting outside, both in the exact same position. But the duality is the chemical of Spider-Man that did not translate in this film.
No, it's very interesting. You said the word understanding, too. And what I have to wonder is, anybody who watched this movie just as a fan of the movies but has no experience or preconceived notions of the comic books, did the suit even convey through to them at
no.
all? I mean, like you're saying, duality. I mean, do you get that it's messing him up? Do you get that, you know, I never really felt like he was turning evil or dark.
Yeah.
I felt like he kind of became a jerk, but
yeah.
not really like anything bad.
All of the pelvic thrusting, I can buy a couple of pelvic thrusts, okay, fine. But all of the other dancing and then the girls kind of look at him like he's a retard.
Yeah.
If you'd have removed all of that and put in the scene I was talking about,
right.
You suddenly have a more coherent reason of why you do not want to have the suit on.
Right, and you really didn't even see the advantages that it gave him. You didn't see his overall strength. You
right.
didn't see his overall aggression. And really, like I said, there's so little Spider-Man action in this movie, especially by that part of the movie.
Yeah.
He doesn't even really get a chance to show it. And,
right.
And so it was an easy thing for him to let go of, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. I mean,
and there's something else that I wanted to bring up, too, and I knew I had to bring it up inside the review because otherwise I'll never be able to bring it up. How cool is the excuse, Mary Jane, I'm sorry I was a jerk. This spacesuit from outer space came down and took me over.
Right.
That's what I want to use when I'm being a jerk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You have this regular girl from, you know, whatever side of New York that they were from.
Yeah, Queens.
Who's barely understanding the fact that you were bitten by a radioactive spider and now you can do all these amazing things.
Yeah.
And then you, like you said, you want to blame it on a stinking black rubber suit over there? That,
yeah. And see that it turned into a suit that he could throw into a and we forgot to mention that it turned into a suit he could throw into a case and lock away. That's not what the suit was.
No.
The suit was a living being that they conveyed a little bit, but that there was that he could rip off a glove and look, it's a Spidey glove he can throw in a box. That's all anti black suit, and it needed to not be there.
And the whole suit part of the movie really just became really bad 1950s science fiction movie. You got the professor in the lab calling up randomly through the movie saying, Peter, I just learned this about it.
You
don't
haven't
do
touched
this.
That, have you?
Blah, blah,
you kept
blah,
any more of that?
And it's like,
yeah,
God,
yeah.
I mean, you know, this would be great if I thought this was a movie that I thought was supposed to be a campy movie, you know, made for a big audience, but this was supposed to be good. You know, like, I know Sam Raimi puts a little bit of campiness in there, which is obvious.
Yeah.
He has gag moments for sure.
And they pay off.
Those pay off.
But
the parts that I thought were supposed to be serious were coming off very, very campy, and it was just, I felt like they were having to do these things to explain a really poor, vague story.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just to keep the story going.
Yeah.
You find a Spider-Man!
The characters.
You know, my take is, this is just my short story of it. Mary Jane, I wouldn't want to be around her. Like, all the benefits of her being a great girlfriend seem to be gone.
She's a whore and runs to Harry
relationship
instantly.
Seems
yeah.
dead. I'm glad you mentioned Harry because I did like Harry in the other movies, but not even halfway through this movie, I was ready for him to die. And I didn't have any preconceived notion of how he was going to, you know, I don't want to give it too much spoilers, but
sure.
how, you know, his part was going to end in the movie. But especially partial amnesia. I mean, I never expected this big third in a trilogy blockbuster movie to rely on good old partial amnesia.
Yeah. Hey, buddy.
He's a stupid happy puppy dog now, you know,
yeah.
and it's just, and the butler, I mean,
the manservant,
could you have not said this two movies ago, or, you know,
yeah,
three, or at
yeah.
least in the beginning of two?
How about any one of the times I was preparing myself from my father's non-existent voice to kill my best friend? Maybe you could mention that sometime.
Sure, and then, of course, Peter, like I said, Peter overall is not that bad yet, but he seems to be getting a little bit fuzzy in some of his emotions and who he is, and Tobey Maguire is overshadowing the actual character.
Yeah. There was a piece of pinnacle, piece of the resistance, Peter, though. The piece when they're sitting in the cafe.
Right.
And Harry's listening to Peter pour his heart out and,
right.
you know, how he's totally being stepped on and thrust upon, and the whole perfect Raimi-esque setup for the destruction of Peter Parker
sure.
once again. And then Harry goes, well, Peter, I just have to tell you, I'm the other guy. Instantly after he said that, I could just hear in my head, dun, 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 dun. And the look on Tobey Maguire's face is absolutely 100% on. Because it's one of those things where if you and I were just sitting here doing this podcast and we were saying nothing to each other and we were writing on there, and then you just haul off and smack me for no
sure.
particular reason. That is exactly.
I'm not saying it's all bad, but I'm just saying that you're starting to see more and more of just a fuzziness.
Yes.
And, you know, like I already mentioned, the Eddie Brock character was just paper thin. But I think the character that bothers me the most in the whole movie is Gwen Stacy.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. Throwaway.
It didn't need to be Gwen Stacy. I understand the damsel in distress in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. How about the tie-in to her father, who is...
I understand a few parts how that character needed to be there and needed to not be Mary Jane for the story, but it did not need to be Gwen Stacy because, first of all, Gwen Stacy is a really important part in Peter Parker's life if you're going by comic book canon.
Yeah,
and I think to bring her in as anything less than that really is...
Doing disservice, yeah.
Yeah, it's a
I
big
agree.
Disservice to her character. So you bring her in, you know, if there are going to be future Spider-Man movies, which is not completely clear... Her character is not going to fit very well in with the future canon of the Spider-Man movies, and they just totally discard her after the jazz club scene. Like,
yeah.
she's just gone. I mean, I know she makes an appearance at the end, which I don't even understand why her and her father are at the funeral at the end. What
yeah.
was their relation to, you know, Harry Osborn?
There wasn't any that they
none,
were in the movie.
None established in the movie.
I thought the Captain Stacy was wasted as well with
wasted.
James Cromwell's portrayal.
So,
wasted. Totally.
Yeah, I just a totally wasted very important character that now that they'll have to really go back or alter or change to continue with that character, regardless of who it's played by.
Yeah.
And the other part that really, really, really bothered me about the Gwen Stacy character was when they have Spider-Man Day and he swings in and does the upside down Spider-Man kiss with Gwen Stacy.
Yep.
Knowing Mary Jane is an audience. First of all, if Peter Parker and Mary Jane are this one in a lifetime storybook love story like that they were in the first two movies and that they are supposed to be. First of all, Peter Parker's, while he has dumb moments in his life, would never be that dumb, that insensitive, and he certainly wouldn't be stupid enough to do it right in front of Mary Jane when he knows she's there. The whole scene was stupid.
I got it even better than that. Okay, it's Spider-Man Day. He swings in. You've never met this girl except that you happen to save her life, okay?
Right.
She pulls the mask off your face. What if she slips? Now what do we do?
Right.
You have 7,000 people with cameras waiting to take a picture of your secret identity. So that whole segment, and that it was a device to make Mary Jane feel a whole bunch of rage and jealousy, is just so over the top. It's blunt, over the head, over the top, unneededness.
And my very last critique of characters in this movie is the people of New York. In the first two movies, the people of New York collectively played a very important character in both the movies.
Yeah.
In the first movie on the Brooklyn Bridge, and the second movie, the train scene.
Yeah.
And that's the scene that made me cry in that movie.
Sure.
And it was because of these people accepting him as, you know, their savior, or at least their symbol, their representation of who they are. Like, he's supposed to represent New York City.
Yeah.
In this movie, the people of New York are portrayed as very stupid, almost clownish, just another throwaway character. Like, anything that involves, I mean, they're either holding balloons like mentally impaired people, or they're just sitting there clapping like, oh, great, Spider-Man. And every scene that you see in New York City doesn't help him at all.
Right. In fact, there was more character to the city than there was to the people of New York.
Which is very disappointing, because they were such big parts of the drama of the first two movies.
That
really disappointed me in that one.
That's a very, very, very good point. You'll find a Spider-Man! The ending. All right, this is our official make you aware that if you do not want the entire movie spoiled, although I think you might benefit by having a little bit of it spoiled, this is the time for either fast-forward the podcast or pause it until you have seen the film.
And I'm going to hijack you right here and say the whole part to get to the ending, hey, random Sandman robbing a bank, I'm random black suit Spider-Man bad guy. Let's go kill Spider-Man. Okay, black Spider-Man suit bad guy. Where did that scene even come from?
You know what? That scene was added.
You right in the face.
There is no doubt in my mind that scene and a variety of other scenes that are in this film, especially towards the end, were simply added in to try and do the handshake. I guarantee it.
I mean, bad guys are not. Even bad guys just don't say, oh, yeah, okay, we're buddies now because we're bad guys. I mean, it was just, again, too stupid for its own good. And I want to go to one more character point on the Sandman. How come the Sandman becomes so stupid once he becomes a Sandman? I mean, I realize he's just this kind of low-life criminal, but he's just like kind of a blubbering idiot once he's Sandman, almost like, you know, Hulk-ish-like.
It's because his brain has turned to sand.
So, yeah, I mean, so to even get
it to... It turned to mud and whatever else.
To even get to the ending, I hated the whole setup to bring the two together. It was so forced, so unnatural, so stupid.
The only thing that was good about the ending was that it was short.
Yeah.
That it was short, and it was... At least there was the action scenes. I did like the ending of Venom. The ending of Venom was solid, and I hope they haven't thrown away that character, because there were many, many gorgeous stories that involve Venom inside of the comic books that if they've killed him, it's going to be the same thing with that they did with Batman, where they killed the Joker in the first Batman
too soon,
film.
Yeah.
And the death of Harry... I get to the death of Harry, and I go, so what?
It was an hour too late.
Something that we talked about in our Two Guys Talking 24 podcast. Here is my overall feeling of Harry dying in this film. Okay, you have Star Trek Voyager. Those of you that are Star Trek fans will understand exactly what I'm talking about. For those that aren't fans, here is the synopsis of Voyager. There's a starship really, really far away, and they're trying to get back to Earth. Boy, that sounds riveting. Okay, so that's what you have. And so the starship is flying through space, and suddenly, for no unexplainable reason, the ship explodes. And what do you feel, that all the characters are dead? Not much. I don't feel anything. And that is what I feel about James Franco's portrayal here, is that it's worthless. There is some successful team-building exercises as they fly and swing and do a bunch of stuff at the end. That's fine. But Spider-Man could have pulled that off on his own. What is it that Harry does for him that he couldn't possibly have pulled off on his own? He doesn't do anything except die. It was a throwaway death. I would have much rather seen them try and elongate James Franco as another real goblin character,
sure,
rather than this throwaway snowboarder guy. Worthless.
You're right. I mean, James Franco at the end is so stupid, so worthless as a character, and nothing on his acting skills, because I think he's great.
But absolutely.
But just so stupid. And in my mind, I'm thinking what makes this a killer movie at the end, even if you have forced in the Venom and you have three villains, while those two are teamed up, while Spider-Man is trying to get Mary Jane from those two, the whole time you have Harry just intent on killing Spider-Man and throwing these little grenades at him the whole time he's just trying to rescue Mary Jane. I mean, that would have been awesome. And
yeah.
I don't know how they would have wrote him out of it, but that would have been good storytelling when they would have. I mean, that would have been a Spider-Man story. And I remember moments like that,
yeah,
you know, reading Spider-Man, but it's like...
We get to Harry dying. We then get to the Sandman, I'm sorry, I forgive you, blow away in dust scene.
Dust in the wind.
Worthless.
That's
worthless. The scene was worthless. It was, again, that blunt over the head, you need to watch this. And even the music that I loved did not save that scene. It was worthless. Oh, you've killed my uncle. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I forgive you. Oh, you've robbed 30 banks. Oh, well, you know what, I forgive you. Oh, you're going to continue to rob because you have to go save your daughter who's dying from a horrible illness. Well, you know what, I forgive you. Why don't you just blow away? No, that's not the way it would work. He's done the crimes. Whether it's an accidental crime or not, you still have to atone for your crimes. And the recent bank robberies, he hasn't done anything for those. He didn't do those with remorse. He was doing them because it's to help his sick daughter.
And more importantly, all of this is for what reason? What is his motivation?
To get a bunch of money.
For what?
To help his daughter.
Where does that go? Nowhere.
Right.
No resolution. Another thrown away character. The characters in this movie.
Well,
almost...
See, to me though, the sand, him blowing away in the sand. What else can he continue to do except be a circus freak,
right?
Or go and rob banks?
Reality show, Sandman, the reality show. I mean, because again, even the dying daughter, sadly enough, is just another character used as a plot device instead of a character to get from the introduction to the end credits of this movie. And
right,
that's how I felt about so many things. The movie's way too convenient.
Yeah.
How Eddie Brock becomes the Venom character, way too convenient.
Yeah.
I mean, for a superhero movie, it's just to the point of being ridiculous.
Yeah. Once we get by there, we get to the overseen shot of New York and the sunrise on New York. Harry dies, fade to black. Then we open back up to the funeral scene. Again, Raimi is a master of creating the pictures. Right out of the comic book, and that scene is fine and done, okay, whatever. Then we get to what I think is one of the most egregious scenes in the entire movie that I actually heard was rewritten, so it's not what's in the novelization for the book of the movie, which I'm going to definitely get out and read because I'm curious now. The end here has to be one of the weakest endings I've ever seen in a film, where it's Mary Jane still screaming her lungs out at the jazz bar / waitress.
That's right. I totally forgot about it until you're describing it to me.
Yeah. And so she starts singing this incredibly bluesy, I've give up on love, and in walks Peter as she's singing this. What is Peter going to think when she starts looking at him and singing it? You know, that's one thing. The second thing is that, for those of you that saw the end of Deep Space Nine, Deep Space Nine did this successfully. Because the crooning, the song that's going on, is saying goodbye to everybody in the cast.
Sure.
Ding, 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 because it's the last episode. That works. Inside this scene with her singing and Peter extends his hand and they clasp and they start rocking together to music, and then they fade to black. Weak. It has to be one of the weakest movie ends I've ever seen. And it needs to not be. There were so many great things in this film that we've reviewed so far, along with the bad things as well. But the ending is the is to put it on a tee and knock a home run shot, and I don't understand why they didn't do it. I don't understand.
I'm there with you because, you know, this very well could be the last Spider-Man movie made for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And by the time other ones are made, these may not even count anymore.
Right.
And so to not wrap it up, like you said, not to hit that home run out of the park to end it all up on what was a great trilogy up to this point, I don't know. And as I was telling you in the before show discussion is, I just really felt like the general consensus of the director, the writers, the cast is they're just tired.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not sick of it, maybe not saying that they dislike the project anymore. Yeah. We're going on 10 years since some of these people first started thinking about this. You could just kind of feel like, hey, let's get this done and go home, almost that kind of feeling
yeah.
to it. Because there's really no excuses. You have no major personality changes in the cast or crew.
Right.
I'm sure that they weren't put under too heavy a budget constraints considering everything that they've done so far. They have no reason to put out such a mediocre third and possibly last movie.
Right.
All I can figure is that they're bored, they're tired, they're ready to move on. And that's really what I got out of this was, hey, please God, let's finish this and go home.
You'll find a Spider-Man 3!
All right, Ryan, final thoughts for Spider-Man 3, the third in what we will probably see as the last film of the Spider-Man series. What are your final thoughts?
First of all, I was pretty hard on this movie, and it hurt me to be that way.
Yep, me too.
I don't take any pleasure in being hard on this movie. But it's because this, first of all, is Spider-Man, one of the most recognizable brands in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he crosses all kinds of racial platforms mm-hmm. in being a hero because I think because he wears a suit, anybody can imagine themselves inside the Spider-Man suit.
Sure. Well, and everybody's persecuted, which is the underlying sure. fundamental thing of Spider-Man.
So anybody can be Spider-Man. You've got one of the biggest brands. You've already had two very successful movies. You've got no excuses in the world. Like you said, this should have been a grand slam. This
yeah.
should have been easy for them to do. They failed miserably.
And then
you have to hold it to such a high standard
yeah.
is the reason why I hit it so hard. But even saying that, I do give this a very reluctant 3 out of 5 stars
okay.
as a movie.
Yeah.
I say if you are a big fan of special effects, you have to go see this movie at the theater
Without question.
To see it on
yep.
the big screen.
Yep.
If you can survive, wait for video.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie you still have to see. You're still, I think, going to be entertained, but you're going to have to put a lot of intelligence on hold for about 2 hours and 20 minutes to get through it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And in fact, what I'm also going to do is I'm going to use the same number that you did. I give this 3 out of 5 stars, where easily the first two would have gotten 5 out of 5 stars.
I would have done 4 and 5 on the second one easily.
Yeah, yeah. The details in this, I think, are summed up easily by the lady that was inside of the experimental installation when they're creating the Sandman, when she says, "Oh, look, the silicon matrix has changed." And some other dude goes, "Ah, it's just a bird. It'll fly away when we charge it up." And the answer is, we're flying away as
sure.
the movie gets charged up. And so with that, we come to the end of yet another spellbinding feature film review with two guys talking. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
I'm Ryan Parker, your other host.
Ryan, thanks for joining us this episode.
No problem.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Two Guys Talking Show. We hope you'll tell your friends and coworkers about us, and don't forget to put us on your podcast list. As always, you can visit and contact us online at twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2, guystalking.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.